September 13th, 2002, House Special Session Committee on Economic Growth and Job Development is hereby called to order. And I want to thank all of you who have been so patient to spend the entire day here waiting for us to talk about an issue. And at this point, it's going to be kind of informational for the committee members. So without further ado, the chair would like to invite the Oregonians for Jobs and Powers. Matt, if you'd like to come forward, please.
Chair, members of the committee. My name is Matt Wingard. I'm the Executive Director of Oregonians for Jobs and Power, a group that I'll tell you a little bit more about. But I do want to thank you all for inviting us here to make this presentation. I know it's been a long day. I intend to be as brief as possible, but I'm also aware that I may be giving you some very introductory information on this, and I want to be sure that I answer your questions if you have any. I'm going to pass out the PowerPoint presentation for all of you so that you have a hard copy of it as well for yourselves. We did mail out packets to every legislator, a little bit of information on this topic. I brought those materials with me so that if any of you have not received them, I'd be happy to supply you with them again. And frankly, I'll just start so that we can move through this and everybody can begin their weekend. Oregonians for Jobs and Power is a loose coalition of businesses, associations, elected officials, community members who have become very concerned about a lack of economic growth in this state, and perhaps something that may be just the opposite of that, a growing anti-business sentiment, that we're concerned that the state, and more specifically that the Portland metropolitan area, may be developing an image, if you will. However, the coalition really came together in the last couple of months as a number of different entities began to express interest in a government takeover of the utility that services the area known as Portland General Electric. We're concerned about the state of the economy and the timing. We're concerned that the ratepayers would not benefit from all of these proposals, frankly, for a government takeover. We're concerned about the size and complexity of this. We're concerned about the fact that it's growing government on a monumental scale at a time when, for instance, today you're all dealing with budget issues and the size of the government as it currently stands. We're also concerned about the actual impact that some of these proposals have on the future of PGE and whether or not PGE will be broken up, if that will be broken up. And I will talk about that and the possible impact as we go forward in the presentation. You all, it's probably a lot easier for you to read in your packets the list of members than it would be to see it up there. But these are our current members. I've taken to updating it at the bottom because, frankly, we have members on a constant basis as people become aware of our group. And there is a lot of interest in joining this group. Our overriding mission is to challenge currently these specific government takeovers, but government takeovers of private business in general. We're very concerned about protecting PGE employees. We want to make sure the ratepayers understand the consequences, the possible downsides of some of the public power proposals that are being put forward. They're getting a lot of information from the other side about the positives. We certainly want to support private investment, and we're also concerned that some of the proponents that are pushing this are organizations that have some concerns or criticisms, if you will, of the Oregon Public Utility Commission. Some of them have expressed an interest in having the OPUC directly elected, and we've begun to reach the conclusion that some of what's pushing is the desire to create a separate entity that would be directly elected and essentially achieve that goal without having to deal with the Oregon Public Utilities Commission. As I said, we're concerned about the economy. I've chosen just a few bullet points here to kind of outline where the state and the region is. I think that most of that speaks for itself. I'd like to just very quickly outline the current status of the proposals that are out there. And they have, at this stage, developed into three different proposals. When I first put this PowerPoint presentation together, there were two. And they may very well be more than three at some stage. The first proposal out there is the city of Portland has currently allocated $500,000, although they've indicated they're willing at this point to spend up to $3 million to study either their ability to condemn Portland General Electric's assets, or they have expressed an interest in purchasing the entire service area and then developing a governance structure to run the service area. Obviously, we're concerned that they've already said that they wouldn't really recoup any of this money unless the entity actually was formed. So we're concerned that under the theory of the more money you spend on something, the more likely you are to follow through on it, that this actually begins to send very serious messages, even just studying it. When you spend this kind of money, you send to private business very serious messages about how strong your intent is, especially as the cost of these studies increase. The second proposal that's out there is an initiative proposal that some community members have, a desire to essentially use the public utility district legislation to break PG up, which currently services six counties, and those are Washington, Multnomah, Clackamas, Yamhill, Polk, and Marion counties, to essentially turn those into five public utilities within the boundaries of each of those counties. Only a very small portion of Polk County is serviced by PG, so they envision Polk and Yamhill being one PUD, and then all of the other counties would become, just within their own boundaries, public utility districts. There's a very low threshold for the signatures needed to get that on the ballot. We anticipate there's a strong likelihood that they will put the Washington, Clackamas, and Multnomah County PUD initiatives on the March 2003 ballot, and then their intent that they've expressed to us when we talk to them is to then put the others on the May ballot.
Yes.
I'd appreciate a little illumination by what's referred to in the bullet that's target BPA power. What do you mean by that?
I'd be happy to do that. The proponents of this initiative have made it clear that the savings here is really through accessing BPA power. These are public utility districts. They become entitled to what's called preference power through the BPA. And that essentially is the driving, let's just say that when the proponents talk about how they're going to save money for ratepayers and reduce rates, they're talking about accessing BPA power. Does that answer your question?
Thank you.
Okay. The other proposal that's out there is a group calling themselves Willamette Valley Power that would like to use the statute known as ORS 190, which is an intergovernmental agreement statute, and essentially have the six counties come together and form a public utility. Now, there's some question about whether or not Portland, the city of Portland, as entity, might be involved in that, and they are currently expressing interest. But originally, the concept was to have six counties form a public utility and bid in the auction process that's about to begin to purchase the entire service area. Our coalition has done some research on this and is very concerned about the use of this statute. This is basically an unprecedented use of the ORS 190. There's reason to believe that every right that this new entity asserts or responsibility that it denies that it has would be contested, because there isn't a lot of legal precedent for it, and it isn't exactly it isn't a public utility district under the PUD law. It is something different, and what its rights and responsibilities are is kind of fluid, and would ultimately probably end up needing to be litigated, because if people disagreed with an assertion that the entity made, they're probably likely to take it to court and get a judge to answer that question. So we believe that there's a great deal of litigation likely to occur in advancing this particular model. And that leads me to the next slide, which is that the people, we're concerned about the people who are pushing this particular proposal, are all folks who stand to make a great deal of money off of the concept. And frankly, they stand to make most of their money on the initial creation of the entity, not on its long-term viability or health, financial health. The folks from Goldman Sachs who have testified in front of the county commissions on this have made it clear that their standard commission is 0.5%, and on a roughly $3 billion purchase, they would make about $15 million. The Miller Nash, the law firm that has really been doing a lot of the legal work on this and has been deferring, their claim is that they've been taking no payment so far and that they would receive payments upon the establishment of this entity. Obviously, they stand to make a great deal of money on its creation. Plus, if it is, as we predict, going to involve a great deal of litigation, then as the attorneys for this organization, they stand to make a great deal of money as it moves forward. And obviously consultants make a great deal of money doing all the rate analysis and everything. And there are truly millions of dollars in research and studies that need to be spent in order to do what's called your due diligence, to really understand what it is that you're getting involved in and the pros and cons and the rest. The coalition is extremely concerned about two aspects of this. One, the speed with which it is moving. Now, they are trying to make an auction process deadline that begins in October and goes through December. And frankly, they've made clear to county commissioners that they have to look what's called legitimate to the creditors in order to participate. And by legitimate, what they mean is that they have to have reached the point where the counties that are going to be involved have voted affirmatively for a charter and essentially obligated themselves to this entity. Once they've created the charter, this is essentially a done deal because the counties have given the full go-ahead, they've signed onto a governance agreement, and the entity is then authorized to bid and purchase the service area at auction. There have been all the meetings, basically, most of the meetings that have been conducted on this have been conducted behind closed doors. They've not been public meetings. And most of the key decisions about what the governance model will be and how the parties that involved that have done research and provided other services are going to be paid, all that's been done behind closed doors. And at this point, I attended a meeting earlier this week at Clackamas County where they made it clear that they intended to come back with a charter within 2 weeks for them to be voting on. We're concerned that that is an extremely rapid timeline for these six counties to be making such an enormous decision for their ratepayers and their taxpayers, and that there really isn't a lot of public input being requested or given in this process. There is already a draft intergovernmental agreement out, which is essentially the agreement the counties would have to then begin working on the charter. I do have a copy of it, and I'd be happy to provide it. These comments are the two things, for instance, to jump out in this process. This whole agreement was formulated outside of the public process, but obviously there's still an intent to not open this up to a public process, which we believe that the first quote indicates, and then the second quote, we've been questioning whether or not the folks who claim to be working on this altruistically actually will be paid, and it looks now like they intend to be paid even if this process doesn't succeed in creating the entity. There is a great deal of money involved in this. We asked Eco Northwest to undertake an analysis of this proposal, and at our request they did. This is just a brief description of who they are. I hope most of you are familiar with Eco Northwest. They do most of their work on the West Coast. Just to highlight some of the conclusions they reached. Now, again, they were looking specifically at the Willamette Valley Power proposal, but frankly, a lot of their conclusions address this issue in general. Their opinion was, overall, that the chances of lowering rates, which is the key promise that proponents are making, is low. And I actually have provided copies of the economic analysis, and it would probably be easier just to leave that in your hands based on the lateness today, but some of the things they talk about is whether or not this entity would be likely to access DTA power, even if they could, whether or not their giant presence in the preference power pool would actually raise preference power rates for everyone, and whether or not there actually in the end would be any real savings there to them. They talked a little bit about the higher costs involved of running an agency like this.
Matt, excuse me.
No.
Did you have a question?
No.
Okay. All right.
I realize I'm moving quickly. If anybody wants me to slow down, I'm happy to do that. They obviously pointed out a concern that we have, which is that under all of these scenarios, the ratepayers lose the protection of the Oregon Public Utility Commission. Part of the proposal is to essentially create the public entity and purchase it, and then what they talk about contracting with private utilities to run it. And one of the things that Eco Northwest talks about is that essentially eliminates the one thing that makes the private utility work, which is that they have an interest in the asset because they own it and its value continues to increase, and therefore they have an incentive to make a long-term investment in it. And by removing the private ownership and simply contracting with them to provide services, they have no longer any incentive to make long-term investments. And so the Eco Northwest conclusion was that you've taken essentially one of the primary principles of the private enterprise system out of their scheme. There's certainly a concern about a loss of franchise fees and local taxes by going from a private to a public utility. The proponents have promised to make up for these with tilt payments. If any of you have been county commissioners, you know that tilt payments have a long track record of being fairly unreliable. And when I make this presentation to the county commissioners, it's usually when their heads start to nod. Tilt payments are not something that they're very pleased to talk about or to contemplate. I want to kind of be brief and move forward. There's certainly a concern that Eco Northwest talked about PG jobs being lost in this process, taxpayers being under some of the condemnation proposals. Most of PG's generation is outside the service area, so it's very unlikely that you'd be able to capture all of PG's generation. And there's certainly some concern that if you don't do that, then your new entity is forced to go out on the energy market to make that up, and that exposes ratepayers and taxpayers to the volatility of the energy market. A couple of weeks ago, the City of Portland passed their resolution. At that time, a number of people showed up to talk about PGE, both its employers and community members showed up to talk about what this company means to the state, to the city, and to the region. And up until recently, it was the collective opinion of most Oregonians, and I believe still is the opinion of the majority of Oregonians, that PGE is this state's number one corporate citizen. They're the most philanthropically involved, they're the most dedicated. Their employees dedicate over 100,000 hours a year to nonprofits and schools and other charities. Our coalition is very concerned about the decision of a number of these. I mean, basically all of these proposals contemplate the end of Portland General Electric. That this state and community would be considering cannibalizing its number one corporate citizen, we believe is just exactly the wrong message to be sending to the business community when we have the unemployment rates and problems that we have, and most of us agree we have a strong desire to attract business and corporations to either relocate or to expand in this state and bring the jobs that come with that. Bill Miller, who represents many of the union employees of PGE, appeared at that hearing and had a very simple message for the City of Portland, and that was to save your money. He talked a little bit about the fact that what they were proposing to spend to study this and to do the due diligence was nowhere near what some private utilities have spent to look at this, and that the cost of actually doing all the work you really need to do to make a sound decision on this will far exceed the $3 million that Portland is talking about. When I talk to county commissioners and others outside the Portland area, there is a concern about how you craft a public utility that services the Portland area, and that they represent about 20-25% of load, without Portland and their ratepayers and citizens essentially dominating that public entity. And obviously commissioners are concerned. This proponent of the Willamette Valley Power actually made this statement to Washington County commissioners at the briefing they gave to Washington County. And frankly, it's a position that our coalition shares. He's essentially describing the way the industrial customers of Northwest Utilities feel about this, and they're actually a proponent of Willamette Valley Power, but they have some concerns. This is a concern that the coalition members all share, and certainly ratepayers outside of the city share this concern. Under the ORS 190 scenario, every entity that signs on to create this agreement is required to hold the vote to allocate the bonding. And the way the scenario is being pitched is that they're essentially taxable bonds at first, and then once the entity is created, they would, over the years, replace those with tax-exempt bonds, which the utility would be legally able to do. Every time those bonds are being replaced, each of the entities that signs on to the ORS 190 has to hold a vote. So if it's the six counties, then each of the six county commissions have to repeatedly hold these votes to allocate these bonds. Whether or not the City of Portland is a member or Multnomah County is a member, that essentially allows them a veto. And obviously, if there's concerns about whether or not this utility could be used to fund things other than just generating electricity, there's some concern about the politics involved in that. And EcoNorthwest's conclusion was that this entity being created would probably become the most highly politicized entity that exists in the state, simply because there are, I think we could agree, some legitimate political differences in Yamhill County than there are, say, in the city of Portland. And yet, they're forced into the same entity under this scenario. There were a number of statements made during the hearing in front of the city of Portland. I placed this one in here because I simply feel that it kind of illustrates some of our concerns about the city of Portland as a manager of this utility or involved in the management of this kind of what would be the largest public utility in the Pacific Northwest.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Representative King.
Is it possible that public entity or several, you know, acquired Portland General Electric, as you're opposing, that they would be a municipal jurisdiction in and of themselves, and that they would be able, as an independent entity, you know, conduct their bonding elections, maybe with theoretical, I don't see any need for a taxing, authority of a taxing district, but they might be able to, have a boundary of a, taxing authority that they don't need to implement. But would they then be able to have, independence of action and not require the, the endorsement of the other political entities?
Representative King, are you contemplating that the city of Portland would simply have a utility that encompasses only its own boundaries? Is that what you're suggesting?
I'm wondering if that's an option, and
sure.
Also, and it would also be true that if the city of Portland acquired that they might be able to then spin it off so that it in effect was its own independent entity if they thought that was in the best interest of the citizens and ratepayers.
It's my understanding that they are studying a number of options, including purchase of the entire service area, or condemnation. Condemnation would involve exactly what you're talking about. They really could only condemn those facilities that are within their boundaries. So that scenario essentially contemplates the utility that exists only within the boundaries of the city of Portland. And yes, it could very well be a separate entity.
So if I may follow then, so the process of requiring multiple entities to endorse, or as you said, being blackmailed or positioned, is a possibility, but not a certainty.
Under the Willamette Valley Power proposal, Representative, that it contemplates capturing the entire PG service area, then the concerns that I'm outlining apply. If under the scenario you're talking about, where a particular municipality, in this case Portland, simply condemns within its own boundaries, then you're actually right. The other counties and the other entities are not involved in the entity that's formed under that scenario.
Another question?
Sure.
Are you able to clarify if the city's condemnation powers supersede bankruptcy judges' ability to control the sale of the General Electric asset?
It's an open question, Representative. Depending on who you talk to in this process, you'll probably get a different answer. I know there are some proponents of public power and one of the proposals out there that believe very strongly that the bankruptcy court has the final say and that they could prevent a city such as Portland from condemning. I'm not sure that's a view or a conclusion shared by everyone, but it's certainly held by some.
Thank you.
We have some concerns that certain criteria be considered by those who are contemplating these proposals, and that would be, again, that PG employees be protected, that the ratepayers continue to enjoy the Oregon Public Utility Commission oversight, that the guaranteed, or I should say promised rate reductions actually be guaranteed in the proposal. And we're also concerned about, again, that due diligence money, that great deal of money that's going to be needed for the counties to do their due diligence and where that's going to come from. And many of the counties have not expressed a strong desire to blend a great deal of money to that, and frankly, based on their current budget conditions, they don't have it. And some of the proponents have offered to access money. Our concern would be that if some of the people who have already done some work on this and have a bill pending, and I mean a bill for services, if they're involved in doing the study, they have an incentive to reach a particular conclusion that encourages this entity to be created because most of them don't get paid unless the entity. So we're concerned that the county or the city, but in particular the counties, if they really are going to contemplate this, that they have control of the money, that they spend the money, and so that the advice that they're getting is neutral. As I attended the briefing that the proponents made, the six counties involved, what I heard from the counties were these three basic desires: that they wanted a seat at the table, that they wanted ratepayers' interests protected, and that they wanted community concerns from the region factored into the disposition of PGE. It's the coalition's position that this is what the Oregon Public Utility Commission provides. I cite as an example here, when Enron was attempting to purchase PGE, there were a number of concerns in the community about that sale, and the Oregon Public Utility Commission placed some conditions on that sale. And while certain shareholders and other people have been hurt by the PGE employees have been hurt by the bankruptcy, ratepayers have been protected in most cases because of those conditions that were placed on there. Certainly, everybody's seen their rates go up. A lot of that has to do with a lot more with the energy market. Public utilities and private utilities have all raised their rates. But we would submit that essentially the Oregon Public Utility Commission did their job here, and that they provide a very valuable service to the ratepayers. We did some polling to ask the community how they felt about this. Our first conclusion was that it's very easy to see why public power opponents are moving at this time on PGE. I had one county administrator who was participating in one of our briefings say to me that the only thing this poll proves is that 19% of the people can't read. Sometimes humor works, sometimes it doesn't. The poll also told us, though, that while people have strong feelings about Enron, they're also just as concerned about the city of Portland, and these are, of course, people outside of the city of Portland, concerned about the city of Portland having some control or say in their power.
Mr. Chair,
we asked this question.
President King?
Could you ask that question about any other local governments? I would assume that there are local other governmental entities that also could be purchasers. I assume that your organization would be opposed to any government organization acquiring.
Correct. But because no other specific entity other than the city of Portland has really expressed that desire, we didn't ask that question.
I see. For example, the state of Oregon could express an interest. I would assume your position would be the same. But conceivably, even a non-geographically related local government.
Well, Representative King, right now I'd hate to see any polling about our state government's ability to run.
Yeah, but I'm kind of interesting, and I don't want to take it too long, but their insight of whether another local government not in the Portland metro area having an interest. I think they probably also have some potential standing, perhaps.
I'm sorry, you were asking me, was there a question there?
Well, it's clarifying my reason for the question in the first place. It was really originally stated in terms of was there the polling, and I think you answered that. I guess my question at this point is, to your knowledge, there's nothing that bars a non-geographically related local government from also expressing an interest as well, and I would assume the organization would oppose that as well.
By your question, I assume you mean another city within the service area or something like that.
Let's say a public utility district that's in another part of the state, or Eugene Water and Electric Board, for example. They're not in the Portland market, but I don't think you have to be in the Portland market to possibly express an interest. Is that true?
Representative King, I'm not sure I can answer that question. You may very well be right that they would have the ability to do that. I can try to get an answer back to you. As to what the coalition's position would be on that, I try not to, when I represent the coalition, I try not to kind of exceed the boundaries of what it is that we're dealing with. And that is an interesting hypothetical, but I would have to talk to the coalition members before I really could speak about how they feel about it.
I appreciate the chair's indulgence to allow just the ability to put some thoughts into see what could be happening here and what kind of scale we're dealing with. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative King. Matt, please.
Thank you, and I appreciate your patience. We are almost at the end of it.
Okay.
We asked this question. Obviously, the missing 15% is that they didn't know or did not answer. I can go in the wrong direction. We put this question to folks. 58% of them agreed with this sentiment. It's certainly a sentiment that the coalition shares. And we distilled that down, and 59% agreed with what I would term just a shorter version of the same statement. What the poll told us, what we believe, is that the people have the right instincts on this. Four of the five highest utility rates in the Northwest are charged by public utilities. And the ratepayers and the voters have a reason to be concerned about Portland being involved in the management of electricity. It's our opinion that there isn't a very good track record there, and this is a big task. Okay, so the question becomes, you know, what's the coalition for and what's the coalition against? Obviously, we're opposed to a public purchase. We're concerned about creating more government at this time. We're concerned about the cannibalization of PGE, the message to the business community, whether or not this assists economic development. We're concerned about condemnation, the legal battles that are involved, especially about the impact on PGE as an integrated utility. And I promised that I would talk about this, and it goes to the last point there. The creditors have made it very clear that they intend to sell PGE as what's called a integrated utility, meaning they intend to sell it all as one piece. The generation facilities out in Boardman, some of the hydro in Deschutes, and then everything within the service area. We believe the reason they have taken that stand is because this community has always sent a very unified, strong message that we will not stand for the breakup of Portland General Electric. And that is a message that we have sent. It's certainly a message that the Oregon Public Utility Commission sent. When we begin to contemplate condemnation, which most of the all of the municipalities can't condemn at all, they can only condemn pieces, we begin to send a message that we will consider breaking out PGE. And frankly, from the creditor standpoint, if they can separate the generation assets out and sell them separate, they're going to make more money. And frankly, if that's something they could contemplate, I'm sure they probably would. I mean, I don't want to speak for them, but from a financial standpoint, it's in their interest. So we're concerned that as we begin down this road and we send this message, we open the window, the door, if you will, and send a message to the creditors that there is an opportunity to break this public utility up and to sell off the generation. Obviously, if the city of Portland or some other municipality were to condemn, they would essentially be condemning the parts that the creditors don't really want to have to sell and giving them free rein to sell the generation, which is outside the service area. What we believe should be an option, and I should preface this by saying that many of these options, the hope for them has begun to diminish directly in the face of some of what's been going on. There certainly could be a local leverage buyout by somebody outside, community organization or individuals, private individuals who want to purchase it from outside the company. The management could attempt to purchase it. The employees could attempt to purchase it. However, we feel the city is sending a message that highly discourages that. We also believe that some of this discourages private utilities from participating in the auction process because there's a lot of due diligence money required to do that. We would wonder why anybody would want to make that investment when the city is openly talking about condemning the asset, and you might be involved in a lot of litigation. You may not have the asset at the end of the day. There was some talk some months ago about whether or not the creditors would hold on to the asset because it's not really a good market to try to sell the utility, hold on to it along with some other holdings, keep a company together that's about $12 billion in asset and run it under a temporary title they were calling OPCO. Many of the coalition members really wanted to see the city of Portland and others in the community make a play for that and try to encourage that the headquarters for that new company, because PG would be by far the largest asset, to be headquartered here in the state of Oregon to lure a Fortune 500 company here. And we have lost some Fortune 500 companies over the last couple of years. The hope of that has diminished a great deal. Obviously, the remaining one, is still the most likely one, is that a private utility will participate in the auction and purchase it. All of these scenarios would fall under the oversight of the Oregon Public Utility Commission. As I said before, you know, we believe that a lot of what is occurring on this topic is discouraging a private outcome, if you will. I simply put a quote from one of the proponents of public power out there. I don't want to be redundant. North Bacon Simpson is a coalition member Mr. Herring testified in front of the city 2 weeks ago. This was part of his statement. I felt that it summarized the coalition's feeling, so I've used it as the final slide. I really appreciate at such a late time in the day the committee's willingness to hear this out and to see the presentation. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to attempt to answer them. If I don't have the answer, I'll do my best to get an answer for you.
Okay, thank you, Matt. Members, do you have questions? Representative King.
I find it kind of hard to imagine that the city of Portland would be aggressively discussing, you know, combination at, you know, at this stage. You know, that's a pretty serious process, and also there's a lot, as you said, there's a lot of legal question. Are you indicating that that's been expressed by the city, or is that just a concern you have that that could be an eventual development?
Well, the city's made clear in their resolution, which I'm happy to provide you all with a copy of, that they will consider condemnation. They've made public statements that they consider it kind of a last resort. There are some who feel that it's part of an, you know, kind of a tactic, if you will, either for the city to gain some concessions on a sale. There are some people who believe that the city is working with Northwest Natural Gas, and that maybe the eventual outcome they'd like to see is they want to purchase it, so it would still be a public utility, but they would contract with Northwest Natural Gas to run it. I really can't speak to the veracity, the truthfulness of any of those. I mean, so much of this is moving so quickly that it really does, at least from my perspective, and I can say it because I'm on this every day, this is my full-time job, it changes day to day. It really does.
So, thank you, that's all.
Okay. Representative Hoffman, you had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question was related to your last comments in regards to what kind of timelines are operational here.
Well, obviously, Representative Hoffman, a condemnation timeline can begin at any point. And regardless of the auction process, the municipality can move under the condemnation eminent domain laws at any time they wish. So the only timeline that actually exists currently is this auction process. The creditors are offering PG up as an integrated utility for auction. And as I indicated before, the process begins in October where they want people to sort of, those who want to participate, to indicate that they want to participate. November, they really are going to narrow it down to just those folks who they see as credible bidders. And then their plan is to accept the final bid sometime in December. So aside from the condemnation ones I've been talking about, the proposals to form intergovernmental agreements and to purchase it for the city, to contemplate purchasing it, they really have to meet these very, very tight timelines and show that legitimacy, if you will. The city is obviously a much more legitimate entity to participate than the loose coalition of counties. They actually have to come together and form a charter and create an entity, a legal entity, or the creditors are not likely to see them as serious bidders. And that involves voting affirmatively and permanently for that charter that I discussed.
Additional questions, Representative Hoffman?
No, thank you.
Okay, Representative Lowe and then Representative Crummell, that's the order I saw you first. My apologies.
No, you go ahead.
I'm having trouble sorting this out, and I think it has something to do with my age and the hour. But thank you, Jerry. At least somebody laughed. So here goes. If PGE is condemned by the city of Portland, am I understanding you right? You clearly to say that means that PUC won't have anything to do or say about how it's run, and that the rates will go up. They will be unfavorable rates for the public.
Representative Lowe, what will exactly happen to rates under any scenario is a completely open question. I mean, everybody on all sides of this map makes claims about rates going up, going down. If you're not with our proposal, they'll go up. If you're with ours, they'll go down. I mean, everybody is making claims about what rates will do. In answer to that question, no one really knows what rates will do. Whether or not forming public utilities actually creates a rate reduction is also an open question, simply because depending on the proposal, some are contemplating getting back some of the natural savings they would have in not paying taxes, getting them back in tilt payments. Public utilities normally enjoy some rate benefits from lower cost of capital, and from, in many cases, they access PPA preference power. And as I said, the Eco Northwest report, and I have a letter here that the chairman of the Steve Wright from the BPA talked about, whether or not an entity of this size coming into preference power, which is already oversubscribed, is akin to kind of an elephant sitting in a small waiting pool.
Mr. Chairman, may I have a follow-up?
Absolutely.
Well, in the Pacific Northwest, we've enjoyed inexpensive power, and I think it's right and fair for us to do so because, after all, it's generated right here from our own assets. And I think that the key to economic recovery for not only the Portland area but the entire state is continued access to that resource for us. How would this proposal impact that? Especially in light of the fact that if it is sold in public auction to the highest bidder, whoever that is, that there is no assurance that they won't part out PGE or its successor and get a higher profit from doing that, and we'll be left without a cohesive company to run the power thing. So I'm concerned about what you're saying. I don't want us to end up in some sort of a regional power grid. Which of these two situations is likely to result in us ending up in a regional power grid and losing the chance of maintaining cheap energy?
In answer to your question about PG being broken up, it's our assertion that any private sale continues to fall under the Oregon Public Utility Commission, which has made it very clear that
they will not sanction
the breaking up of PG. So all of your private bidders that come to the auction understand that they're buying an integrated utility. I mean, for instance, Enron had some interest in separating the utility, and they were never able to do that and gave up and let it run on its own. So we believe that private purchase option is the one that most successfully guarantees PGE remaining as an integrated utility with all of its generating assets together. As to your question about how to lower rates and which scenario offers the best chance for lower rates, I'm afraid that's an open question. And when public power proponents suggest that they're going to lower rates, it is simply a suggestion, and there's a lot of rate study that needs to be done, and there's certainly some difference of opinion about whether or not the savings that are being indicated are actually there. As I said, one of the best sources for low-cost power for a public utility is the Bonneville Power Administration, and there just simply is not the preference power there at the BPA to give to an entity this size.
Last question, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Matt. I'm concerned that if there is to be an auction in such a dreadful hurry, October, it's going to take a little while for us to sort out the answer to the question that I just asked. What's in the best interest of the ratepayers? What's in the best interest of economic recovery for Oregon? And then, that being the case, is there any way to delay the auction until we can figure this out? Would that even be wise?
Representative Lowe, I'm not sure that I'm the person to answer that. The Federal Bankruptcy Court and the creditors, well, the Federal Bankruptcy Court is truly the entity that dictates the timeline, but the creditors and Mr. Cooper, who's the interim CEO of Enron, who's job it is to try to get as much for the creditors as possible. They're really the ones driving, crafting, and running the auction process. As for a delay, it's just pure conjecture, although just from a financial standpoint, obviously the creditors want to execute a sale of the assets in as expedited a process as possible because their creditors are not really people who run utilities. You know, they want the assets to be sold so that they can recoup some of the cost on the money that they lent the previous company. So they don't want to hold the asset for, you know, for very long. Does that answer your question?
I guess my biggest stumbling block is your assertion that maintaining it as a private company is more likely to keep it from being broken up and preventing the creditors from maximizing the return on their investment than the city of Portland purchasing it or condemning it.
Well, again, the difference between, say, Duke Energy purchasing PG at auction and the city of Portland purchasing PG is the city of Portland would be crafting a public entity, which may not fall under the Oregon Public Utility Commission oversight, whereas private utility purchasing PG, that entity continues to exist under Oregon Public Utility Commission oversight. So all of their rate setting, anything they want to do with the company, if you have any, if you followed the OPUC, and the, I mean, everything a utility does is highly regulated. Every decision they want to make, that kind of thing, comes for them. I mean, the rates especially.
The morass of regulation. Thank you very much.
Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a couple of questions here, kind of going back in history a little bit. Can you tell me why PGE was sold to Enron in the first place?
No, sir, I cannot.
Do you recall, or in your research, have you found, was it a hostile takeover?
While I am a native Oregonian, Representative Crummell, I have to admit that during that particular period, I was not living in this state. I was living in the great state of Washington, and I did not follow the purchase at that time. So I cannot answer that question correctly.
Okay. Mr. Chair?
Yes, Mr. Cream, do you have some light to shed on that question?
I did follow that professionally, and it was not a hostile takeover. It was a buyout by Enron, and they made an offer, and the public was aware of it, and other companies or individuals could have also made a superior offer. When you place an offer to buy another company, and then they respond in the affirmative, at the moment that they have affirmed, they've essentially stated that they felt that they are reasonably valued in that transaction or better, and so someone else could have purchased them, but it was not a hostile takeover. Actually, the Enron acquisition was really about the first of takeovers of public utilities by of utility companies trying, and their strategy was, as I recall, to take advantage of the ability to have Northwest Power match up with California obligations, and it really was kind of a beginning of Enron's strategy that they later built upon, and of course took advantage of it. Friend to offer.
Thank you. May I ask
another question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If Portland were to bid at auction for PGE, would the PUC have to approve the sale, or is the PUC pretty much out of it and the bankruptcy court will then determine who the purchaser or who the owner of Enron will, I mean, of PGE would be?
It's somewhat of an open question. I've had discussions with the chairman of the Public Utility Commission. We haven't talked specifically about that scenario. Frankly, that scenario wasn't on the table when I had my last conversation with him. But there's some question about whether or not the Oregon Public Utility Commission, what their role is, let's say, in the bankruptcy process, and whether or not a judge can allocate or okay a sale of the utility with or without their input.
Okay.
And then, as I've indicated before, once it becomes a public utility, which your question suggests, if Portland is purchasing it, it's going to become a public entity, then there's usually a petition to be removed from the Oregon Public Utility Commission.
Well, that's why I'm wondering, where, I guess I'm asking the same question with regards to what the role of the PUC is going to be can a federal bankruptcy court basically render them irrelevant? And so if a bid by Portland or this coalition of counties or anybody else for that matter is approved by the bankruptcy court, then does the court have the authority to basically say, yes, okay, you are now the proud owner of PGE, and you can, you know, and if it's a public entity, then of course federal law preempts everything. Okay, so that's the short answer to the question.
Representative Carmel, I'd add one thing. While you're essentially right, the creditor's interest, obviously, is in a smoothest sale as possible. And any scenario that raises the kind of question that you're talking about jurisdiction and the rest, that might invite litigation and tie the matter up, is obviously a disincentive to the creditors, because the last thing they want is to not be able to dispose of the asset in a timely manner, again, from a financial standpoint. So, I mean, they may have a financial incentive to stick with it, but I'm just saying as a general theory, if the scenario you're contemplating or the bidder you're contemplating accepting from is likely to be tied up in litigation over oversight or whether or not they have eminent domain, or the rest, you may have a disincentive from selecting that bid if you can't, you know, if the sale is not likely to be executed or finalized anytime in the near future.
Okay. One more question, Mr. Chair. Matt, do you know if PG is currently using BPA power, or they're not using BPA power?
They do purchase the BPA. I'm no expert on the BPA power scenario, you know, and all of the things that they do. But PG does purchase some BPA power, but not what's called the preference power, which is this kind of lower cost power that's offered to public utilities. They purchase power at more of what is a market rate for BPA.
Okay. One last thing, Mr. Chair. I want to declare a potential conflict of interest because I'm a ratepayer for PGE.
Let it so be noted.
Sure. Actually, I have Representative King before you, and then you'll be next, Representative Brown. Representative King?
Well, I didn't have a question, but I was kind of thinking about, you know, sponsoring an investment banking offer, but maybe I should just put on that.
You need to declare a conflict of interest.
I don't think I have a conflict here. I'll try and think of one later.
Okay. Representative Brown.
Matt, do you know, does public utilities come under the PUC regulation?
No, they did not.
Are the generating facilities for PGE all within Oregon, or some of them outside of Oregon?
I believe PGE has some interest in some coal plant or coal field, something in Montana. They may have a line, you know, PGE as a company or this spokesperson person would be much more able to answer that question for you. But other than some connection to Montana, I believe the last time I looked at a list, that all of the generating capacity is in the state of Oregon. There's also contracts. PGE has energy contracts, which aren't necessarily a physical generating plant. Not all of those plants. But in fact, the vast majority of the power is produced outside of their service area.
Thank you.
Any additional questions on that?
Matt, I have about three or four quick questions I want to ask of you. In your presentation, you talk about smaller utilities may see higher rates, and that is a result of what in your mind?
Again, the concern that small utilities may have, and you know, it's something again that's talked about in this letter from Stephen Wright from the BPA. The question is put to him about an entity of this size. This would be, as I said, the largest public utility in the Northwest, and as a public utility entitled to ask for preference power. The question was put to him, you know, what effect would that have on the other public utilities, or at least on the preference power rates themselves? And as I understand it, and again, I don't want to claim to be an expert on this, but the way preference power works is that BPA already has sort of, if you will, if I can simplify this, too many public utilities or other people asking entities that have a right to that power. Less, in other words, they don't produce enough of it to meet the demand. So they augment it by going out on the power market, and then they average the cost out. So the preference power cost you know, is it at a certain level, but they're already oversubscribed. As Stephen Wright says, if an entity of this size were to come in and demand, as they rightly could, preference power, although they couldn't do it in 2006, and there's reasons for that, they're already oversubscribed. So they're going to be out on the market to buy all of that demand, and then they will cost average everyone who gets preference power. So everybody's rate at the preference power level goes up as more power on the market needs to be purchased to supply that preference power. So, again, the analogy I was using was imagine a small wading pool and an elephant comes along and sits in it. Maybe that's not a good analogy, but...
Well, it's certainly an interesting visual. Okay, that explains that to me. You also mentioned here on page 23 talking about a concern being expressed by Rhys Bly from Miller Nash about if Portland were to produce the ownership of this PGE, that they would load it up with social programs in that you really wouldn't be paying for energy. Is there anything that would keep, in your mind, that would keep Willamette Valley Power from doing a similar thing? Could they do the same thing?
Mr. Chair, I might add that those are the proponents expressing that concern.
I understand, but it's a concern in my mind if the reasoning for doing this on the part of Portland or anyone else who's interested in this from a public utility standpoint is to provide lower cost power, but in fact they load it up with social programs that increase the cost, it seems to me that the purpose is somewhat defeated.
Mr. Chair, I think that's essentially what the Washington County Commissioners were getting at when they asked Reese, and they were talking about the Willamette Valley Power scenario, but the question was, is Portland going to be involved, and are they going to want to be sort of the seventh signatory on this? And Reese's reply was at that time, I don't know. I don't know where Portland stands on that, but I certainly understand what you're getting at. There's a concern there, and then he was articulating the ICNEWS view that, and, you know, I mean, I hate to speak for other people, but, I mean, The concern here, obviously, is that there's a political reality in the Portland metropolitan area that's not necessarily true outside of that. I think this body, you know, certainly aware of that. And there is concern by the folks who are outside of that the public utility might provide other services over time. Obviously, there are other regional governments within the Portland metropolitan area that people have experience with. And they have concerns that creating a public utility essentially creates another political entity that people will do battle over. And as you said, that there will be those who wish to use the ratepayers' money for things other than generating electricity.
So would it also be possible that a private utility could purchase the assets of PGE and could also... do a similar thing in terms of loaded up with social programs, or would that be less likely or more likely or the same in your mind?
I think the coalition's position is that that's less likely.
Less likely.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair?
Yes.
May I jump in here for just a second?
Sure.
Because I feel like I need to clarify something with regards to local government budget law. And that is on an enterprise governmental agency. There has to on an enterprise governmental agency there has to be a nexus between the expenses and the rates that they charge to their customers. And what I mean, for example, the city. If you live in a city that has a water service. That water service is an enterprise fund, and it's they try to make it self-sustaining. But at the same time, Oregon budget law would not allow them to, the city that owns it could transfer funds out as they could borrow funds from the water fund to, for example, build a road. And they would have to show how they're going to repay those funds, but they wouldn't necessarily ever have to actually repay it. But you can't just raise the rate on the water to buy a new road. It there has to be between what the provision is, there has to be a nexus between that and the rate that's charged.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that clarification.
I guess what I'm trying to do is set aside, I guess, the argument that that a local government, Portland, loose coalition of counties, whomever, would start throwing, could just, you know, sort of say, well, gee, we need to fund our mental health program, so we're going to do that by charging more on this. There would have to be some kind of a nexus. They could do loans, however.
Okay. Third question is breaking up PGE's assets. It's entirely possible that a public utility could do that, but a private company could do that also, correct, in your mind?
Theoretically, it's possible.
Okay.
However, it's our position that it is highly unlikely for a private utility to be able to break up the assets because they're under the Oregon Public Utility Commission oversight. And the OPUC has made their position on that clear time and time again, and we don't believe they would stand for a breakup of the assets.
Okay, and my last question is, and it may have been answered, I may not have just caught it, but during the bankruptcy proceedings, can Portland actually condemn PGE during the bankruptcy? Would the federal law, bankruptcy law, allow that to occur?
Mr. Chair, I'm not an attorney. I
can
say happily.
Fair enough.
It's again an open question. There are those who believe that a bankruptcy court could prohibit even a condemnation. That may be true, but again, a municipality is free to condemn at any time. They can, if they are not able to condemn while a bankruptcy proceeding is going on, they can simply wait until after the bankruptcy proceeding is finished, and then no matter what the outcome, they can begin. If it's still in private hands, they can begin a condemnation proceeding then.
Well, but if part of the bankruptcy proceeding was the dissemination of PGE assets to a qualified bidder, then how could a condemnation proceeding occur after that? It seems to me that a bid would be let and accepted by the bankruptcy court. So,
well, Mr. Chair, the condemnation law, eminent domain, is blind to who the owner is. So the new owners are simply the new owners, and they may own it for a day, or they may own it for a day. Although condemnation proceedings take a great deal of time. But it's certainly possible for somebody, a private utility, to bid at auction, to be selected as the winning bid, to finalize the deal with the creditors, to take ownership of the company, and then be served notice from any entity, the city of Beaverton, anybody, any municipality with eminent domain, that they intend to condemn the assets within their jurisdiction. And the fact that you just recently purchased it does not make any difference.
Okay. Well, that concludes my questions. Any additional questions with Matt? Matt, thank you.
Appreciate everyone's indulgence.
Okay, the chair would like to call Gary Conkley. Gary, if you would come forward, please. And Julie Brandes from AOI. That's fine.
Mr. Chairman,
welcome to you, Gary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Gary Conklin here today representing industrial customers for Northwest Utilities. I'm not a consultant for Willamette Valley Power, and therefore am not deferring any consultant fees. But my client, which, as you know, represents many of the largest industrial electricity users that buys power from electric utilities in Oregon, is among other customer groups interested in seeing the Willamette Valley Power proposal advance. It isn't endorsing it yet, but it believes it may be the most promising and perhaps the only opportunity to secure local ownership with management that has an alignment of policies that takes into account customers. I can't tell you the frustration that my client company have at the moment. the previous speaker noted that four of the five highest utility rates in Oregon are by public utilities, neglected to note the highest rate for industrial customers is PGE. And if you want to know why some companies have not hired back people or have curtailed operations or moved them to other states, if you ask them, they'll tell you, because they have high electricity rates, non-competitive electricity rates. We have frustration as well with rate setting that's occurred within the last year by the Oregon Public Utility Commission that has continued to add to rates in investor-owned utility areas involving both PGE and PacifiCorp. It is out of that frustration and out of a sense of economic survival that we're looking for a credible option to find a way to help our company survive in these times. In doing so, to help the state get out of the economic quagmire that it's in and perforce the revenue problem that the state and local governments have as well. The previous speaker made a number of statements, and my purpose here will not be to try to refute statements, but anybody who has spent time in this region should appreciate the role, the positive role that public power has played. And this is not a comment meant to be any kind of disparagement for private power, because in fact, Oregon has had in its history a substantial, well-fought battle between private and public power interests. But if you think about one of the most significant energy-related efforts in our region that has helped shape the economy, the culture, and the lifestyle of this region, look at the Bonneville Power Administration, which is a regional collaborative effort granted under federal charter. If you were to look at many of the most successful operating utilities, a number of you are in communities that have such public power organizations that do an effective job, that have alignment with their customer and community interests. They're not always perfect, but they don't deserve to be shuffled out the door just because they are related to government. I might also note, it's sort of interesting, that the lowest cost power that PGE has comes from contracts with three public utilities in the state of Washington that operate generating facilities in the mid-Columbia area. I think it's kind of an interesting side note that much of PGE's rate structure and generating assets come from publicly managed power sources that are not part of the federal system. The discussion of condemnation and preference of who you would like to buy is a fascinating subject. And if this hearing would have been advertised to a wider group of people, you would have had an adjacent number of people, like the previous speaker, who would have told you what their preferences were. But here's the reality. The reality is a creditors committee representing people who lost money because of the Enron situation are trying to find a bidder who will pay the most money for a variety of assets, including PGE. And as the previous speaker indicated, indicative bids are due in October. There will be a finalist list, a narrowing list in November, and they plan to make a decision in December. Subsequent to that, state and federal regulators will have a role. It really isn't all that much of a question mark. The Oregon Public Utility Commission will be involved in determining details of a sale. So will the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. There will also be a bankruptcy court decision. This is a protracted, involved matter, without question. But it boils down to who's going to bid and who can win the bid. The bidders are going to be people that think they can make money. Principally, they will be the people who think they can make money by buying PGE. The exception to that, at the moment that I'm aware of, and there may be others, but at least the only one that I can contemplate and my customers can contemplate, contemplate is Willamette Valley Power that isn't trying to find a way to make money. It's trying to find a way to maintain local control over a critical piece of infrastructure in our state, a utility, an integrated utility. It doesn't have an interest in selling off its parts. It doesn't have an interest in jacking around its customers. It is interested singly and solely in finding a way for us to get a better rate structure, maybe not overnight, but as soon as we can, through prudent action. Its advantage in the bidding process is that as a public entity, it would have access to lower cost capital. This is what they said. It is not about trying to acquire BPA preference power, which incidentally isn't necessarily the cheapest power right now. But as the previous speaker indicated, BPA is oversubscribed. The Willamette Valley Power is not counting on accessing preference power as an advantage. One of the other advantages, frankly, which is something that I think is a good question, a good public policy question, is that as a public entity, it would not be subject automatically to property tax or the state income tax. And that's a fair question for you to look at in these times. And that's, I think, without question, maybe the major issue. But these are the advantages that it has in bidding to win the bid against potentially bidders who aren't necessarily local companies or even companies in the United States. I draw your attention, the Pacific Core is owned by a utility based outside the United States, and it's not neither a good nor bad thing. It's just, frankly, the world of utility is also an international traded sector, just like many other commodities. So my own plea, to the extent that a plea is in order, is that this is serious business. There are very serious men and women working on it. Many of them are working actually without pay. At least as best I know, I'm unaware that the law firm of Miller Nash or the investment banking firm or other rate analysts are actually collecting any money. The fact that they might collect money is no more notable than the similar counterparts working for other interests that will bid. There will be investment bankers involved in every bid, public or private. There will be lawyers involved in every bid, public or private. And there will be rate analysts in every bid. So the fact that somehow people will wind up getting fees isn't an issue, because anybody doing their due diligence will hire competent counsel. The counsel, the investment banking counsel that's assisting Willamette Valley Power, is not speculative. It actually has been involved in a similar public-private acquisition of a utility in Long Island, New York, that was done with government support because of what its benefits would be to local ratepayers and to the economy of the state of New York. It's not without precedent. It's not without potential benefits. It has issues, and they barely can be discussed, and they surely will be. But I would certainly hope that we would not do anything to discourage or even blunt this, because contrary to one statement that I will take issue with on page 2 of the previous testimony, says talk of condemnation or public purchase is devaluing PGE. Quite the contrary. Willamette Valley Power is in contact with the creditors committee on a virtually weekly basis. They aren't viewed as devaluing PGE. They're viewed by the creditors committee as potentially the highest bidder for the reasons I state. So I urge you to recognize this is a matter with considerable consequence, with a great deal of complexity, and that it is something that many people may have a preference, but in the final analysis, the preference that will count will be who's the highest bidder and subsequently who can get regulatory approval, including approval for a bankruptcy. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Good question, Gary. In reference to the page 2 comment you just made, it's your contention that public purchase doesn't talk of that doesn't necessarily devalue PGE assets. Is it your opinion that talk of condemnation does?
Mr. Chair, I have no knowledge of whether it does or doesn't. I don't know whether or not the creditors committee believes that a condemnation threat is real or not real. I don't know. I think there, as have been sort of suggested here today, and there are people much more competent to talk about this than myself, that don't necessarily believe that condemnation might cover the entire range of assets that PGE has. Whether that's true or not true, I don't know. So I have no idea about that. But I can only address the Willamette Valley Power proposal. I think it actually is having the opposite effect, and the creditors committee has given them to believe that a public purchaser might actually be in an advantaged state to offer more money than a private bid.
Okay, thank you, Gary. Julie, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Julie Brandis, representing Associated Oregon Industries. A little bit of history, both about the industrial customers of Northwest Utilities and Associated Oregon Industries. We have a combined membership, so our thoughts are very much the same. We have been working hard in this legislature, probably since 1996, at least this team you see before you, working hard on energy issues, trying our best to protect customers and trying to look at what is coming down the road. And our, we think a special session committee, this committee addressing energy issues is appropriate. I think my membership would argue, however, that your time would be better spent looking into the current problems customers are facing, especially as they relate to our high rates. Regardless of what happens to PGE on the auction block, customers believe Oregon lawmakers do, and probably I know we will ask you to in the 2003 session, to look at the PUC and the way it's setting electricity rates. Customers believe that the high electricity rates are crippling Oregon's economic recovery, and we will be seeking changes to address problems with the PUC. I also want to comment with that in mind, that it's nice to know that PGE has been nominated as the Corporate Citizen of the Year. I could bring in easily a handful of AOI board members who have testified for the last year about the crippling effects of these rates. They've had to cut back employees. They've had to cut back benefit programs. Mike Seabers from Blue Heron testified before the Speakers Committee a few weeks ago that corporate income taxes, my profits have all gone to paying for my utility rates. So with that in mind, I would like to address, I'm not quite sure what it is I'm addressing today because I don't see a bill before me, but I believe the issue is what happens to PGE. And PGE is for sale. And this is not new. This is the fourth time that PGE has been offered for sale in the last 5 years. As Sarah stated, and I think he did a good job of stating it, this is sort of the utility industry now. The new twist in the situation is that the sale is being driven by the bankruptcy of PGE's parent company, Enron. And the bankruptcy process and the auction process through which Enron creditors are attempting to sell all of Enron's assets brings a complexity to the set of issues that would already be complex in their own right. Understanding that the issues are complex, there's one way or another, it's important to note that the potential options of what can happen to PGE is really quite limited. And that is why the AOI Energy Committee has kept all of our options open. We haven't taken a position in support or in opposition to Willamette Valley Power. The Energy Committee at AOI has suggested that we continue to look at that as a viable option. One of the most significant reasons why is local control. And as Gary stated, Scottish Power purchased Pacific Corp, and that's neither a good thing nor a bad thing. But that's not local control. And neither is having a utility owned in Houston. That wasn't local control. So our members do feel that we need to keep our options open. So there are basically five options for the future of PGE, and I'll just state them relatively briefly. The first is private ownership. There are two private ownership and three public ownership options, I think. And the first private ownership option is that Enron keeps PGE under a restructured company. I think most people have the feeling that that's not going to happen. The second private ownership option is having PGE purchased by another private entity. This is the route that we have seen in the last two purchase attempts by PGE. As you remember, the latest private utility attempting to buy PGE was Northwest Natural, and that was something AOI testified in support of. We liked the idea of local control. On to public ownership, one option would be the formation of several people's utility districts, or PUDs. The proponents of this approach seem to be working on to file a series of local ballot initiatives. And they also suggest using some condemnation to acquire the existing assets at PGE. We see, I think our energy committee, which is meeting Thursday on this issue, by the way, that there are a number of problems that would require this approach. The second public ownership option involves the city of Portland and their recent resolution expressing interest in exploring the acquisition of some or all of PGE's assets. And again, there are a lot of complexities with this, and we haven't seen enough details to say one thing or the other. And the third is what we've just heard a lot about, and that is the public ownership option made through the county-oriented efforts through the county's purchasing PGE. And I think what's important to note is the word purchase. This is, PGE is on the auction block, whether we like it or not, whether we like Enron or not, whether we like what has happened in the energy business or not. It is on the auction block, and there are a variety of interests that may wish to purchase it, and Jerry described the process which they will go through. If one of those interests is a locally controlled group, and there's also been discussion that I heard someone speaking earlier mention it, of even combining with something like a Northwest Natural Partnership, those all have a positive ring for our members because control in other states and other countries have not always served our best interest. So we do have criteria for whatever does happen for the purchase of PGE. We believe no ratepayer can be left behind. Whether a customer is a residential or a commercial ratepayer, the interest, we've always felt customer interests are aligned. And every customer is at risk in this Enron bankruptcy. So we figure that the solution must serve the entire territory. And the service, and the second would be that the service territory must be kept whole. And the third criteria, all of PGE assets must be kept for the service of residents. I think you noticed probably from my opening comments that Oregonians for Jobs and Justice suggests that we'd be losing something extremely valuable with the loss of OPUC governance. As Gary has stated, our members have a long, because many of our members are located in publicly owned PUD or cooperative territories, local control has also served their benefits as well. Locally elected boards also protect customers. And I don't think you'll have to do a lot of connecting of the dots to take a look at why customers, especially recently, feel so strongly about some of the OPUC decisions and also are seeing increases in our electricity rates. So that is summed up my testimony on what I'm not sure that I hope that qualifies where we are.
Thank you, Julie. And
to sum up, qualify where we are. We'd like to keep all our options open at this time.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. And just to share with everyone that there is no legislation here before us or proposed legislation at all. This is simply an informational hearing that was requested. And I apologize if I didn't make that very clear from the very beginning. There is no legislation here to deal with this issue one way or the other. So, members, Representative Crumwell, you have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Julie, I somewhere along the line missed what your second criteria was. I've got the first one, no ratepayers left behind. I've got the third one, all PGE assets kept intact.
The service area must be kept whole.
Service area?
The first criterion. It's not in the ratepayers' interest to have the territory divided up or somehow be served differently. The territory is designed to be operated as a unit.
Okay. Another question, Mr. Chair?
Sure.
Are there currently on the? I want to speak for a second specifically to the Willamette Valley Power Consortium, and I've been trying to sort of read through this IGA, Intergovernmental Agreement. But are there any county commissioners that are currently supporting, you know, coming out and saying, yes, I endorse this idea, I think it's a terrific idea, and we should pursue it in our county or in this region?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Crummell, I think there have been a number of county commissions that have taken positions that are similar, actually, to the customer positions, that it's an idea worth continuing to explore. I'm unaware that any commission has taken the step of authorizing officials to enter into an intergovernmental agreement, but I'm aware of at least some of the counties assigning staff to begin to do some of the work looking at elements or even steps towards doing due diligence. So I believe there have been expressions of interest. I hesitate to speak to the county directly, but I was at a meeting that was alluded to in this presentation and heard them firsthand, and I think I saw and heard at least four of the six counties within the jurisdiction. And ironically, one more, Jefferson County, where there's a PGE facility, where a delegation was also at the meeting and expressed interest in the Willamette Valley Power idea as well, from the vantage point of being a county affected by a facility, not within the service territory, but that is home to a generator.
Interesting. Okay. May I, Mr. Chair? Are there, well, one of the things that I've read previously, and maybe it was, I read it in the paper, anyway, is about Willamette Valley Power sort of saying that they think that they can provide a rate decrease, an immediate rate decrease. I think it's been somewhere in the neighborhood of about 10%. Is that, I guess my question is, how are they going to do that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, I think that's a goal that they have. I think maybe for the customers that I represent, a more significant goal is actually the one that Julie mentioned, which is local control and management of utility assets with an alignment of policy with customers and communities. I think all of us are realistic that any purchase of this asset could lead to further rate pressure.
Right.
It doesn't take a genius, and in fact, I listened to Mr. Wrighton, the head of Northwest Natural, describe their own proposal, their own attempted proposal to purchase PGE, which they abandoned for a mix of reasons, perhaps. But the debt load that was implied in their proposal was substantial. And debt load is not paid by shareholders. It's paid by customers. Customers wind up being transacted here. That's what this is all about. And the reason why we have asserted ourselves is that since we're being sold, we want to have an actual, realized voice in maybe what happens after. So our belief is that the Willamette Valley Power structure through its charter will take into account our interest in the handling of the debt and ultimate rate setting that's going to result as a function of that debt combined with the basic fixed cost of the utility. PGE as almost everybody is aware, is a profitable entity within the Enron corporate structure. So there are profits. Now, they aren't as large as PGE once had, and saw their last quarterly earnings were substantially down as a result of decreased usage. And Julie, in particular, led a group of people to testify that that's exactly what would happen if you raised the rates. I mean, this is economics 101 here of supply and demand. You get the price too high, people are going to not use as much. But there is still profit within the PGE structure. It's a well-run utility overall. So the basis of a well-run utility with preferential financing, that is access to capital at rates that public entities might acquire, are really the leverage points both to bid high enough to win, as well as to create a debt structure that isn't overly onerous on
debt. Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, I've never, ever since I've been an energy lobbyist, the AOI professed to be a rate expert. I don't know how Willamette Valley Power professes to reduce rates by 10%. That is not what my members have reacted to. To lower rates by 10%. Again, I think Gary stated it somewhat that our members are reacting to a need to have a utility that is responsive to their needs, that and a governance structure that doesn't increase rates 53% with about 6 weeks notice.
Okay, Mr. Chair, if I may, I as a comment, sort of a side editorial comment, I recognize the fact that the energy crisis, if you will, of early 2001, basically, you know, has, I don't want to say gone away, but it has subsided considerably, and one of the reasons is because our aluminum plants are sitting there idle while they're still paying, or they were sitting idle in 2001 when California was turning off power and that sort of thing. A lot of our aluminum plants were either shut down completely or they were running reduced loads. But I'm just curious as to I have a love-hate relationship with Metro, and this entity would be larger than Metro. How is it that, I mean, and I understand they're going to be in the Metro area, I guess. But if this entity is as large as it's going to be, what keeps it from sort of ending up like the political football that Metro ends up as, sort of being kicked around and pulled in a lot of different directions and ideological battles and all of those sorts of things? How are we assured that that's not going to happen? I mean, I've seen one public entity do it, and it happens to be Tualatin Valley Fire Service. I'm pretty impressed with the way they operate.
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, I would agree. I think that when you look at, in that case, of Tualatin Valley, which is a special district for utility, there's not a history of sort of running off cliffs. In fact, utilities are subject to control, but more important, they're a business. And by and large, they're run like businesses. This is conceived, Willamette Valley Power is conceived, it's not just as a public entity, but as a public-private partnership, and its governance structure would reflect that, even though it would technically be a public entity, and no one's disputing that. And it correctly noted as a 190 organization, an intergovernmental agreement. While all those are true, those are reasons. The reasons for that are to acquire the benefits as a public entity, namely access to lower cost capital and other benefits. But I think what is envisioned here, and the people who are sitting at the table beginning to try to frame them, are customers. Our colleagues from the Citizens Utility Board that are statutorily the ones that represent residential ratepayers are also at the table.
And do you have customers looking at a way of trying to find a mechanism to finance the purchase of a utility, which has been, I think, noted, transacted already, or at least been in play, four, maybe five times, depending upon how many we want to count. We would like to see stability. We're tired of paying more debt or more turnover. And again, utilities, the costs they have are paid for by customers. We are the stakeholders of interest. So our point is that we're looking for a way to align ourselves in the governance structure to have a utility that operates like an effective system with all customer interests. This isn't just the industrial firm, but with residential and commercial customers' interests as well. And it's not an easy job. And by the way, this may not succeed. Willamette Valley Power has an uphill battle. It has its own set of inertia to overcome. It may not even get to the bidding, but it deserves a shot. And if you look back in December, and if you look at the list of finalists, and you don't see anybody local on there, you can say to yourself, at least one group tried. And then, you know, heaven help us, let's hope that the high bidder is the party that will take into account. I hope when you're in December, the highest bidder, the bidder still in play, is somebody that's a local interest. And if there is another one, that is to say, another private interest, you haven't heard me say anything negative about that. In fact, many of the qualities that we're looking for are a local, stable ownership of these utility assets. But in the absence of anybody else that we see making moves, Willamette Valley Power may be our best, perhaps only, option for those goals.
One last question, Mr. Chair, and then I'll quit, I promise. Would there be a property tax liability for the property taxpayers in either any of the counties that sign on to become part of this Willamette Valley Power or any other entity that might be formed, that if the rates were not sufficient to cover the debt load?
Mr. Chair, Representative Trump, that's a question I don't know that I'm competent enough or have enough knowledge to answer accurately. So instead of giving you a non-answer, I just assume to say that I'm not sure I'm competent enough to answer that. If you recall that in addition to property taxes, income taxes, there's a third area of issue, which is the franchise. And these are all issues that are being given consideration by people that are aware and knowledgeable about them, and they're being factored into the equation. But as I actually explained earlier on, I'm not one of the consultants that's putting together the deal, so I don't have that level of intimacy with all the details.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kremel, I'm not one of the consultants either, but and I think Gary expressed that the Willamette Valley Power option is an uphill battle. One of the things they must complete is the feasibility study, which will take in, I think the point of the feasibility study is to take into account all the unanswered questions, and not being the expert here, but and the arrangements that would be made between the counties and the agencies that's not signed on. So I think that would be better. I don't think anyone would actually really know the answer at this point about feasibility study at this point. And again, not having that completed and getting closer to October, just to show you what an uphill battle is. But it is a local option.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. I've been kind of modestly surprised to see that employee stock option purchase plan hasn't been one of the options that it seems to come out. So because employees would have the right to form an ESOP, employee trust, and buy it, and it would seem like another option. But I haven't seen anything on that. But I've been a bit surprised that hasn't been the case. I think that the local control issue really is pretty substantial, and that I can see the reason why the proponents of the presentation would like to see private companies. But I have some concerns about private utility companies from the South buying Portland General Electric, because Portland General Electric today has a rate, has a responsibility to take care of the ratepayers and to, you know, their shareholders. Whereas, for example, San Diego Gas and Electric has a responsibility to their ratepayers and their shareholders, and that's their first priority. And so if they acquired Portland General Electric, for example, as a subsidiary, then they would have some particular interest in capitalizing on what Enron was trying to capitalize, and that is that we use power in the winter and send power south in the summer, and there could be in effect some wealth transfer or rate transfer as a part of, you know, working out, you know, that arbitrage. Their interest would be a little bit different than if the entity was, you know, locally owned. And also, even conceivably a little step further, you talked about some of the, you know, the industrial users locally. At some point in time, there could be a, you know, decision of either a new industrial user or competitive industrial users where they want to come into a market, and if they can get the power in another location cheaper than they can get the power in this location, that award determines, you know, where that industry, you know, might locate. And any comments you have on that, I would welcome if you would like. I do have, finally, an interest to know what the corporate structure that Lawn Valley Power, you know, might anticipate having, and if those are going to be public employees as well.
Mr. Chair, Representative King, again, I don't know that all of the planning has been done, and I'm probably not aware of all that has been done. At least in a conceptual form, the structure that people have talked about for Lawrence Valley Power has been one in which it might use outsourcing techniques. And just as an example, one of the Northwest Natural was interested in potentially acquiring PGE was to combine their distribution system. Northwest Natural is very effective at the business strength. And it's been discussed sort of broadly in the region that having a combined distribution system with the efficiencies that could afford might be a good thing. Any purchaser might think of that option. Willamette Valley Power is intentionally thinking of options like that, not just in a distribution system, but perhaps other places. Would there be public employees? Yes, because it would exactly be a public entity. What the exact dimensions and how they would go about selecting contractors or strategic partners, I'm just unaware. I don't think that the level of development of the proposal has reached that point. But conceptually, at least, I think what I've described is what the architects of the idea have envisioned. And that seems to me to have a lot of appeal. I might just add, I certainly sympathize with the employees for PGE. I mean, this has got to be wrenching for them, not because of Willamette Valley Power, or not because of the city of Portland, but because of what's happened to them in the interim. And I think we ought to actually step back a moment and understand why they're in the distress they're under. Many of them have lost the value of their 401k, accounts, their jobs are in jeopardy, not for anybody's fault locally. What people are trying to do here is piece together the best puzzle we can. And I hope that it does provide opportunities for PGE employees. Many of them are people that I know and you all know. Trying to require certain guarantees is a fascinating idea and the kind of thing you hope for. And in fact, I think for the Lambda Valley Power, people are trying to anticipate how to best use the workforce of PGE, which is complicated. So those are values that we ought to care about because they're Oregonians, they're our neighbors, they're members of our community, and they're not trivial. Trying to figure out how to make it work, at least you have one group of people who are their neighbors who are thinking about it.
In the case of the Willamette Valley Power, these employees are also, in many cases, in most cases, the constituents of the men and women sitting around the table talking about putting together the proposal. So they aren't disassociated from them. They are related to them and voted into office because of them.
Mr. Chair and Representative King, one thing you noted in your series of statements and questions is how difficult it is when the utility from outside the state operates the utility within the state. And I would just make sure I put it on the record that those concerns already occur, especially with the Pacific Corps. They operate in a variety of states. Utah is a big example. And in fact, our colleague, King Cannon, just spent the last 2 days in Las Vegas trying to debate about what happens when you have a multi-state corporation, multi-state utility, and how do you best serve the customers. Those problems already occur. They occurred whenever you have an outside interest, whether it be with the utility party.
Mr. King, any further comments? Gary, a question for you. You talked about how one of the ways that potentially Willamette Valley Power could be successful in a business model of purchasing PGE is because of lower cost capital available for those purposes. But you also talked about, and this is one of the points that Matt brought up, was about the preference power issue. And you said initially in your comments that preference power may not be the cheapest power available out there today. But if that were one of the components in your business model to make Willamette Valley Power successful in terms of having the lower cost power, where would you get that if you didn't get it from preference power at BPA? Are there other sources that are available that are actually cheaper?
Mr. Chair, there are other sources of power that may be cheaper, and you have purchasing in the wholesale market is good and bad, as we've all witnessed. But as most of you are aware, PGE buys a substantial, and has historically bought a substantial amount of its load on the wholesale market because it doesn't have the generating capacity to cover its current load. The question of the advantage for Willamette Valley Power has two parts. They're not counting in their pro forma preference power action.
Okay.
It is access to lower cost capital, and the fact that they would be a public entity and not taxable. A policy issue, this is what I addressed earlier about property tax and state income. How you might negotiate out payments in lieu of taxes, appreciate that is a tricky piece of territory. And I acknowledge that I think that is, in my personal opinion, one of the most significant policy questions that there is. But nonetheless, when you want to know what the advantage that it has in both bidding and in rate setting, those are the two that they're counting on. Now, the preference power issue, I believe, is also an issue with future potential significance. As most of you are aware, Oregon and Washington are the almost identical opposites in terms of their mix of public and private power. And the debate about, for example, the future of the Bonneville system and the potential regionalization of that system are in many cases complicated because of the heavy public power preference in Washington versus our private power preference in Oregon, and that is also true in Idaho, where a different mix of public and private power interests in this state might shift and create a different alignment of interests that could perhaps lead to a different construction of how Bonneville and those assets are not only managed, but also allocated. So I think it is an issue of significant sort of geopolitical significance down the road, even though at this moment, quite correctly, BPA wouldn't be able to supply the power even if they saw it through preference power
acceptance clause in a claim. The pro forma that Willamette Valley Power is preparing is not counting on the preference power from DTE. Okay.
Mr. Chair, just before we leave, I wanted to follow up on something that Gary said, that utilities are a business, and that is true, although they are a monopoly. And so when they go to auction or when they are sold, we go with them. We don't have a choice. And AOI and ICNU, and especially ICNU, especially the industrial customers, and CUB, Citizens Utility Board, have been actively involved in every purchase decision or every time that PGE has been either up for sale or in the past 5 years. We do not enter these issues lightly. We do not enter these issues because we are opposed to something. We are out there protecting our best interests, trying to find the best possible suitors in any case we can. We don't know who everybody is who is looking at PGE. In fact, most of the companies are keeping that relatively quiet if they're looking at PGE. But again, we ask you, if you're going to listen to this issue further, to really take into account the broad customer issue and interest in this.
Okay. Well, thank you both. I do appreciate it. Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to comment? Hearing none, it is 6 o'clock, and I thank you all for your presence to stay here through the day, as we have been unable to hold this hearing as we were originally scheduled at 10 o'clock this morning. Thank you, and with that, we will close the public hearing, and have a good evening.